This is Radio Romania International. You are listening to our one-hour broadcast in English for listeners in Western Europe and Africa. We can also be heard on the internet at www.ri.ro, Channel 1. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter and other social media platforms. Our programs are also available on TuneIn, Radio Romania International 1, and in Europe via satellite Eutelsat 16A on 11,512 MHz, vertical polarization, azimuth 16 degrees east. We wish you good reception conditions.
Welcome, I'm Mihaela Ignatescu with the news, the headlines. The Romanian government will assume responsibility in Parliament at the beginning of next month for bills aimed at administrative reform and economic recovery. Romania is participating as a guest of honor in the 57th Cairo International Book Fair, one of the most important publishing events in the world. And CSM Bucharest defeated the Croatian team RK Podrava Koprivnica away from home in Group B of the Women's Handball Champions League. The Romanian government will assume responsibility in Parliament early next month for bills on administrative reform and economic recovery measures. The two documents will form the basis for this year's budget, which anticipates a deficit of approximately 6% of the GDP and an inflation rate of over 4%. The Ministry of Finance is expected to present the main indicators in the coming days. Once the bills on administrative reform and economic recovery reach the legislature, the Parliament's leadership will set a deadline for the formulation of amendments. This will be debated in the relevant committees, and the amendments voted on will be sent to the government, which may accept them or not. Parliament then meets in a joint session where the Liberal Prime Minister Ilie Bolojan will present the final form of the documents. If within 3 days of their adoption no motion of censure is tabled for each individual bill, the measures are considered adopted. The Romanian authorities have made clarifications regarding the law on acquiring and retaining Ukrainian citizenship, which came into force on January 16th. According to the Foreign Ministry in Bucharest, the new law mainly targets Ukrainian communities abroad and does not apply to persons who already have Ukrainian citizenship, including ethnic Romanians in Ukraine. The law adopted by the authorities in Kyiv stipulates that Ukrainian citizens residing in Germany, the Czech Republic, Poland, the United States and Canada can acquire a second citizenship without being required to renounce their Ukrainian one. The law also allows ethnic Ukrainians in those countries to become Ukrainian citizens through a simplified procedure. The peace talks in Abu Dhabi between the United States, Ukraine and Russia have ended without results. New discussions are expected on February 1st. These are the first known direct negotiations between Moscow and Kyiv on the American plan to resolve the conflict that has resulted in tens of thousands of deaths. Ahead of the talks, the Kremlin said that Russia would maintain its position and that there would be no peace unless Ukrainian troops withdrew from Donbass. Earlier in Davos, U.S. Envoy Steve Witkoff also spoke of progress on a number of issues, except those related to territory. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky does not accept the surrender of parts of Donbass still controlled by Ukraine, and polls show that Ukrainians do not want territorial concessions either. Russian officials have warned that until a peace agreement is reached, Moscow will continue to pursue its objectives consistently. Russia has launched massive attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, leaving hundreds of thousands of people without electricity and heat in the freezing winter. Romania is participating until February 3rd as guest of honor in the 57th edition of the Cairo International Book Fair, one of the most important publishing events in the world, thus marking 120 years of diplomatic relations with Egypt. In figures, Romania's participation in this fair includes 30 distinct cultural events over 30 days, 60 special guests, authors, publishers, translators, artists, academics, 10 titles translated into Arabic for the first time, and 10 participating Romanian publishing houses. Among the Romanian authors invited are Tatiana Țibuleac, Ioana Pârvulescu, Denisa Comănescu, Matei Vișniec, Varjan Vosganian, Bogdan Alexandru Stănescu, Cătălin Pavel and Radu Vancu. The literary program of Romania's participation in the Cairo Fair includes debates and roundtables dedicated to contemporary Romanian literature, poetry, prose and intercultural dialogue, with an important emphasis on translations and editorial dialogue through the launch of Romanian volumes translated into Arabic. And our sports CSM Bucharest defeated Croatian team RK Podrava Koprivnica 33-28 on Saturday evening in an away match in Group B of the Women's Handball Champions League. CSM secured its fifth consecutive victory in the group and will play its next match at home against the leading Brest-Bretagne Handball on February 8th. Also on Saturday evening, CS Rapid Bucharest secured its first victory in Group C of the EHF European League Women's Handball Competition, after defeating the German team VfL Oldenburg at home with a score of 34-30. Rapid will play its next match on February 8th in a rematch with VfL Oldenburg. In contrast, CS Minaur Baia Mare was defeated away from home by the German team Thuringer HC, the trophy holder, with a score of 33-26 in Group A of the EHF European League competition. And that was the news from Bucharest, Radio Romania International. Time now for a music break on Radio Romania International. Listen to Dara and her hit Healing.
Se deschide ușa ca să iasă afară, gândurile toate ce m-au încurcat. Să mă întorc la mine după ani și dealuri, să cânt doina cu sufletul dezbrăcat. Se deschide ușa ca să iasă afară, gândurile toate ce m-au încurcat. Să mă întorc la mine după ani și dealuri, să cânt doina cu sufletul dezbrăcat. Mă iert, mă iert, că nu mi-am fost eu omul cel mai important. Mă recunosc, mă vindec cu puterea neamului ce mi s-a dat. Mă ca să iasă afară, gândurile toate ce m-au încurcat. Să mă întorc la mine după ani și dealuri, să cânt doina cu sufletul dezbrăcat. Se deschide ușa ca să iasă afară, gândurile toate ce m-au încurcat. Să mă întorc la mine.
Euronet Plus Panorama is a weekly review of European news broadcast by our network of EU radio stations.
Hi, I'm Jo, and you're listening to Euronet Plus Panorama. With all the recent talk about the importance of safeguarding European democratic values, we return this week to the subject of press freedoms across the bloc. Somewhat alarmingly, the picture that emerges is not simply one of journalists being threatened by criminal organisations or foreign regimes. Increasingly, the threats appear to be coming from the national political arena, and even from citizens themselves. The European Parliament awarded its Sakharov Prize for 2025 in Strasbourg on the 16th of December. The prize shone a spotlight on two journalists jailed for, and here I quote European Parliament President Roberta Metsola, Speaking Truth to Power in Authoritarian Regimes, Andrei Podchobut from Belarus and Tsia Amaglobeli from Georgia. Their cases are emblematic of the risks journalists face around the world and the need for lawyers and international institutions to act to defend press freedoms. In an interview with France's EU Radio, Amaglobeli's own lawyer, international human rights advocate Keelan Gallagher, underlines the significance of this year's award.
So I think the Sakharov Prize being awarded to these two jailed journalists sends a very clear message that journalism matters, that arbitrary detention of critical voices won't be tolerated, and that the international community is going to stand up to these kind of bully tactics. A few years ago in 2021, when the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to two journalists who were at risk, Dmitry Muratov in Russia and my client Maria Ressa in the Philippines, it was a real clarion call to the international community to say, journalism matters and democracy matters. Now, unfortunately, 2025, 4 years later, we're seeing some of the trends of targeting journalists not only continue, but actually worsen. And that's why the European Parliament stepping in right now and giving this particular award at this particular time is key.
Gallagher goes on to detail how Amaglobeli's case closely mirrors many other cases currently playing out around the world.
What this case is really about is an attempt to shut down her journalism, but it's dressed up as something different. And we see that all around the world. So when I represent Maria Ressa, the Nobel Peace Prize winner in the Philippines, you know, she gets accused of fraud and tax evasion. Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong also accused of fraud. Jose Ruben Zamora in Guatemala accused of corruption. But in reality, all of those cases are just a legal pretext to try to shut down their journalism. And the same thing's happening with Zia. She, in a piece of reporting, said it's ridiculous that people are being arrested for putting a very small sticker on a wall. And she held up a very small sticker by a wall. So she initially was arrested for that. We then know, because we've seen the footage, that she was physically assaulted by Georgian police officers. And then when she pushed back in a very minor way, she then got arrested for attacking a police officer. So the legal smokescreen doesn't say she's being prosecuted for journalism. But make no mistake, that's what this is.
Although cases of journalists being targeted within the EU do not, as things currently stand, constitute clampdowns by authoritarian regimes, there certainly appears to be increasing top-down pressure being applied to certain media outlets and professionals in a number of member states. One case that is making waves in Bulgaria is that of esteemed journalist Maria Tsantsarova, who was taken off air at the end of December. Tsantsarova was an anchor of the prime-time morning show at BTV, the biggest private television network in Bulgaria. The case triggered a protest organised by the Bulgarian branch of the Association of European Journalists and a campaign in support of the many Bulgarian journalists who have been deprived of the opportunity to ask politicians uncomfortable questions. Vladimir Yonchev, editor-in-chief of independent media outlet Off News, tells Bulgarian National Radio that the campaign itself has revealed the scale of the problem in Bulgaria.
We have missed too many cases similar to that of Maria Tsantsarova. When we were discussing what this campaign would look like, our initial idea was to display the faces of all the journalists removed from their positions in this way, in other words, under political pressure. But when we were drawing up a list of people, it turned out that there were so many of them that we could not feature them all on one banner. We would have had to make dozens of banners. And it dawned on us how long we had been silent, how long we let this go on without providing the necessary protection from other colleagues.
There's a clear sense among journalists in Bulgaria that Tsantsarova was asking politicians too many difficult questions, which is exactly the point of a journalist, argues Yonchev.
Whoever sits in the chair opposite her certainly feels uncomfortable, and that's actually the role of a questioning journalist, to make you feel uncomfortable, not to provide you with a platform from which to do PR.
And he goes on, this is just the latest manifestation of a much wider problem, namely the increasing popularity of so-called news platforms on social media that look at an issue from a single angle, and often a single viewpoint.
We have a huge problem in the media environment in general. Politicians are increasingly avoiding debates in the traditional media. It is very rare for two politicians representing different points of view on any issue to sit down together in a studio to debate.
Journalists also took to the streets in Lithuania last month to oppose two proposed changes to the law on the Lithuanian National Radio and Television, or LRT. LRT is Lithuania's public broadcaster. The First Amendment targets LRT's budget, which lawmakers have voted to freeze for the next 3 years, a move that overrides the existing budget-setting mechanism. The second concerns the rules governing the dismissal of LRT's Director General. The proposed amendment would allow the LRT Council, a supervisory body made up of 12 members who are appointed by the President, the Parliament and several national advisory bodies, to remove the head of the broadcaster by simple majority rather than the current two-thirds requirement. Critics fear that this would make LRT more vulnerable to assaults on its independence. Indeed, even the European Centre for Press and Media Freedom is concerned that such a change would open the door to greater political pressure on the LRT's management and potentially violate Article 5 of the European Media Freedom Act. A working group has been set up in the Lithuanian Parliament to gather input from a range of experts and institutions. Žinių Radijas asks Mindaugas Sinkevičius, the leader of Lithuania's Social Democrats, the largest party in the ruling coalition, about his take on the affair and if this new working group is just a paper exercise. Sinkevičius is clearly keen to play down the situation, suggesting that it has all been overly dramatic.
I think that the situation may have gone beyond the framework of lawmaking, but now it has returned to normal, orderly limits. There is a working group, there is no rush, there are discussions, and everyone who wants to talk is being included. Yes, everything that happened at the Seimas, the bonfires, the protests, the speeches, well, they did not go unnoticed.
Behind closed doors, though, some in the Social Democrat Party have voiced concerns about meddling with the public broadcaster in this way, for fear of attracting the ire of the European Parliament. Sinkevičius is also coming under pressure to cut ties with the party's populist coalition partner, Nemunas Dorn, the instigator of the proposed change in the law. Political scientist and journalist Martin Wassermeier is Secretary General of Reporters Without Borders, Austria. He is asked by our colleagues at Agora how he sees the current media landscape in Austria.
Overall,
media freedom in Austria is not yet in such a bad state. Nevertheless, there are always incidents that give pause for thought. I recall, for example, that a few years ago, the Klagenfurt investigative journalist Franz Miklautz set out to investigate inconsistencies in the financial management of the city of Klagenfurt. As a result, the public prosecutor's office paid him a visit and actually confiscated his work equipment, his notebook and his smartphone. This is a massive impairment of journalistic work and, of course, a clear violation of press freedom.
Then, in early 2025,
during the coalition negotiations following the victory of the right-wing Austrian Freedom Party, or FPO, in the country's general election, the party's leader, Herbert Kickl, made it explicit that he intended to take direct action against the independent press. While the FPO was ultimately kept out of government, this is indicative of a worrying trend, says Wassermeier.
It became very clear that the FPO wanted to do away with independent critical journalism and also wanted to undermine its economic foundations. This nightmare eventually came to an end. Unfortunately, what has remained in our country is this mindset of behaving in a very derogatory and disparaging manner toward independent journalism. This is a very widespread phenomenon that can be heard time and again at demonstrations with criticisms of the lying press or legacy media, creating the foundations here so that independent journalism and media freedom can be permanently enshrined in law is certainly a priority goal for the next 2 or 3 years.
In neighbouring Italy, one night in the middle of October, a bomb exploded under the car of prominent Italian investigative journalist Sigfrido Ranucci. With his investigations touching on topics such as drug trafficking, he was already under police protection, and this was another clear act of intimidation. Roberto Saviano is a fellow Italian journalist who has also been under police protection for years, after being threatened by the mafia-style criminal organization known as the Camorra. He tells Radio 24 that criminal gangs are no longer the only thing journalists need to be concerned about. Echoing Martin Wassermeier, he notes a worrying change in mindset among both politicians and the general public.
Quello che sta accadendo in Italia fa molta paura. Non sta accadendo solo in Italia.
What is happening in Italy is very frightening, and it is not only happening in Italy. Isolation, politicians targeting individuals, never responding to the issues they raise, but attacking the individual. Attacking the individual seems to be a fatal reflex, and everyone feels entitled to attack that individual, because it now appears to be natural to consider those who put their head above the parapet as responsible for any harm that comes to them. Nowadays, a 16-year-old I meet thinks that because I have chosen to criticize the government, I deserve to be physically targeted, that if I didn't want this treatment, I shouldn't have criticized the government.
Se non avessi voluto questo trattamento, non dovevo criticare il governo.
German EPP member Sabine Verheyen raised a similar point at a European Parliament hearing on the European Media Freedom Act, or EMFA, back in December.
And we need also a change in the approach in societies. For example, all these threats we are facing against journalists, especially in Italy or in other countries, are also a question what is accepted in society and what's not. And it's not always just a state issue, but a mindset issue. And I think we need a stronger engagement in all the member states, and perhaps also supported by programs and by the Commission, that we can get another mindset when it comes to media freedom, to independence of media, and that's for me a part of media literacy and democratic understanding, and there we have to do much more than we did in the past, and I think one important step is EMFA.
The Media Freedom Act has been gradually implemented since May 2024, with its main provisions coming into force on the 8th of August 2025. These provisions relate to transparency of media ownership and advertising, independence from political interference, the protection of journalists and their sources, and the supervision of digital platforms. But it's not all bad news when it comes to public perceptions of the media. Journalists working for one of Portugal's most respected news magazines, Visão, have launched a crowdfunding campaign in an attempt to collectively buy the struggling magazine at auction. The aim is to prevent it from closing down or from being taken over by one of the big media groups. In its first week, the crowdfunding campaign had received some 3,000 donations, totaling well over 100,000 euros, which means they're already more than halfway to their 200,000 euro target. The response from readers has exceeded all expectations. In an interview with Renascença, the magazine's director, Rui Tavares Guedes, underlines the wider importance of this initiative, explaining that it's not good news for press freedom if only the big press groups survive.
Visão is a space for press freedom. It is a newsroom where ethical rules are scrupulously followed. If only the strongest survive, we have less plurality and press freedom is put at risk. This is obvious, because if information is controlled by just two or three players, two or three groups, all with the same style, things become complicated. That is why we want to demonstrate that there can be other ways.
So, here's hoping the donations continue to pour in.
You are listening to Radio Romania International.
Next in this broadcast, it's All That Jazz. Welcome, I'm Mihaela Ignatescu. Today's edition features one of our great supporters of jazz, blues and world music, concert and festival organizer and promotional tour organizer, journalist, instrumentalist and teacher Alexandru Sipa, who would have turned 80 today. He was also president of the Muza Foundation, an institution that has awarded several prizes and distinctions to Romanian artists and managers, both in the country and in the diaspora, every year for a decade and a half. He collaborated extensively with Radio Romania, both as a music columnist and as a manager of the big band. In his memory, let's listen to a piece from the repertoire of pianist Sorin Zlatu Jr., one of our talented composers and improvisational instrumentalists discovered and supported by Alexandru Sipa, who was a passionate promoter of jazz. The idea of a jazz and blues awards gala emerged at the end of the 1990s on the initiative of radio and television producers Florian Lungu and Alexandru Sipa, as a project of the then radio music department, but it materialized in 2003 and until 2022 took place every year. So let's go back in time a little and listen in the next few minutes to the jazz creation of some members of the Radio Romania music bands, vibraphonist Alexandru Atanasiu and percussionist Lucian Maxim, both winners of the Revelation of the Year Award at the 2009 Jazz and Blues Awards Gala. Back to Sofia. Thank you. guitarist Alexandru Man was also considered a revelation of the year in an interesting instrumental conversation with another instrumentalist, the well-known guitarist Sorin Romanescu. The two improvisational artists offering, in a world of surprising and original sound colors, some unique versions of unmistakable jazz works, such as Blues for Alice, which we invite you to listen to in the end of today's show.
Living Romania. Hi everybody, this is Anna Maria Popescu with a new episode in the Music Time series. My first guests this year in Radio Romania International studio are Taking Back August, a modern metalcore band set up in Bucharest in 2020. I talked to them about the band's history, about their first album in Romanian to be released this year, and about why a live music gig is about more than just music.
Hi, I'm Claudio, the bass player of Taking Back August. Hi, everyone.
Hi, I'm Alex, the vocalist of the band Taking Back August. We are very glad to be here.
I read about how the band started, and I think it's a very nice origin story that you come from two separate bands and mingled, and that's a lovely thing. And I know you don't talk much about it.
Yeah, because it was not like something that, let's say, memorable or let's say like the very nice story of how the band was formed or blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was like a random day at a random rehearsal room. I came with other business. My current boys were there with other businesses and were like, okay, let's try to play something. I mean, I had a guitar with me and I was like supposed to be the guitarist in the beginning, and Alex was supposed to be as well the guitarist, and we were supposed to have another player, another vocalist. After that, we had another rehearsal where the ex-vocalist, he was like missing from that rehearsal, and then I said, okay, Alex, sing, okay.
It was very hard for me to play both guitar and vocals in the same time, so we hired Chuck.
Yeah, Chuck, which is like a friend of mine. I mean, my first metal band was with him. And the current drummer that is actually new in the band, but we sang together in the band before Taking Back August.
Same one.
Yes, exactly. Like in 2015 or 2016, we were like we had like a band together. Then I switched to bass and we hired Chuck after that.
Yeah, but something good came out of it.
Nothing was planned. But yeah.
Nothing was planned, exactly.
Serendipity.
It was something very...
You are listening to Radio Romania International.
What are the bands that do inspire you?
It's somehow like a popular trend now with this kind of music, which is started to be called, I read somewhere, it's called baddiecore. It's like dark pop music combined with, let's say, modern metal, instrumental, slower, but all of them, they are like from Deftones, Muse, and I would say something like hard, the father of djent, let's say Meshuggah. But like those bands actually inspired all the headliners now. Like, I don't know if you talk about like Sleep Token, Bad Omens, all of them got like inspired. And the new wave of metalcore actually, because like right now our influences are the main headliners that we have like in our era. So we have like Bad Omens again, era, or I don't know, Architects or Sleep Token. Our inspiration we get from those bands, but from the roots is actually Deftones and Muse. And I grew up with Deftones and Muse, like Alice.
Yeah, if you go back in time, those are the bands that inspire all of us.
So that's why I would say Deftones and Muse on the roots combined with our main thing, let's say, I don't know, breakdowns and low tune guitars and atmospheric and synths.
I noticed that you're quite careful with your visual identity as a band.
We were inspired by a band called Lord of the Lost. They are from Germany. We were their openers and we saw them playing live, and they were looking very, very hot. I think that was the moment that we realized, what if we will try that?
We understood in that moment that playing live music is not the only thing that you have to do when you have a concert. Because I was like thinking, okay, if you want to listen to the music of your artist that you want to like see, you can like stay at home, you have like your good headphones, good sound system, you have the music at the quality you want. But once you go out at the concert, the quality is not going to be the same because it's live.
Yeah.
But you need to be the reason of that moment. I mean, to put a smile on people's faces, because it's not like only the music. You need to like to be present for them. You need like to give like memories for them. Yeah. You need to be like, okay, why I'm gonna pay a ticket for you? Only for your music is fine. I have Spotify subscription. So what makes the difference between Spotify subscription and you? The moment that you are.
Yeah, we took care of our image.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's like a part of an experience that you...
Exactly. We want to give our fan base an experience, not only a concert.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask you, speaking about this image of yours, if it's a marketing tool or if it's somehow related to the message that you want your music to...
That's a good question, actually. Both of them, I believe.
Yeah. In reality, they are both.
Because the genre we are playing, it's like pop of metal. I mean, everyone is playing almost the same things. So what makes the difference between us and others?
If you see something like us on the reels, you are like, oh, what? Uh-huh. Like, you are pausing.
Yeah.
So,
you've been busy these days shooting for a video. How did it go?
Yeah, it was like amazing.
Is it for a new song? Is there a new album in the works, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yep, there is a new album. We don't have the name for that album yet. But we are trying to make it look, I don't know, maybe different. Mm-hmm. So this album will be in our language, in Romanian. Well, the album, when we thought about a concept. I don't know, maybe every song has a story that combines. It's something like
a puzzle.
Like comes together. Yeah.
We're like thinking about this transition, let's say, to Romanian language. Since we've been at X Factor, because after we got into the finals, like everyone was telling us, what if you should represent your genre in Romania? Because so far, I mean, I don't want like to say to myself that, okay, I'm a good artist, but like I want like the honest opinion of people that are listening to my music, even though like I'm doing what I want, but at the same time, the people are the only resource that you have as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing else.
So is it easier? Is it more difficult to sing in Romanian?
Alex?
No. I can't say that it's difficult. No. In the contrary, actually, because in the first place, singing in our own language, we can target more people. That's the idea behind it. And maybe, I don't know, we can grow a bigger community.
And I believe singing in Romanian is like much more personal to people that are listening, because the way we put the words and phrases and emotion is like very touchy compared to the same words that you have in English. I mean, it's like maybe it's coming from Bakovia. I don't know, but I felt that with the only song that we have in Romania is Ano Timp, and everyone, like, when we are singing live, I see, like, on people's faces that they are like, fully connected with that song.
It has another touch.
Exactly.
They are mesmerized.
Exactly, mesmerized. That was the word I was looking for. Yeah.
So when can we expect a new album?
That's
a good question.
Even for us. So we expect to release the first song on March. The second one we expect somewhere in May. And for the EP, most probably after the summer.
These have been Claudiu and Alex of Taking Back August. I leave you with their piece Shoreline. Look them up online if you like what you hear. I'm Ana Maria Popescu. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to Radio Romania International.
World of Culture. Welcome, I'm Mihaela Ignatescu. Today we bring you a short interview with director Andrei Epure, co-writer alongside Ana Gheorghe of the film Don't Let Me Die. Premiered at Locarno in the section dedicated to new voices in cinema, the film deliberately explores an area of ambiguity, oscillating between arthouse horror and an absurd comedy about death, a combination that defines the irreverent humor present in other screenplays by Andrei Epure. In Don't Let Me Die, the director expands on the story from Interphone 15, presented in 2021 at La Semaine de la Critique, a section of the Cannes Film Festival, exploring in his feature film debut a world where the line between absurdity and human fragility is becoming increasingly blurred. Filmed over 26 days in Eforie, Mangalia, Neptune, Olymp and Bucharest, Don't Let Me Die follows the efforts of Maria, played by Cosmina Stratan, who tries to organize the funeral of her enigmatic neighbor, Isabella, played by Elina Levinson. A humane gesture throws her into a maze of bureaucracy, strange encounters and oppressive silences. The story in Don't Let Me Die was born from a memory of co-writer Ana Gheorghe about a lonely neighbor who died near her home. Essentially, the film is a cry against oblivion, says Ana Gheorghe, who is also the film's producer. We talked with Andrei Epure about how he constructed the portrait of the main character in Don't Let Me Die and about his sources of inspiration.
Mă interesa cum aș putea să portretizez în absență pe cineva care...
I was interested in how I could portray someone in their absence, that is, a person who becomes more present after death than they were in life. In a somewhat simplistic way, post-mortem is the only way you can build a portrait of someone, because death offers finality, and this finality allows us to draw conclusions, even if they are still based on fragmentary observations. For example, the portrait of the character Isabella is made up of just a few elements. She talked to trees, she had two dogs, she was a teacher of Latin, and she had a child. I was also interested in what the mysterious life of an enigmatic character might leave behind. In this case, what remains after this woman's death are two dogs. What can the two dogs convey to the woman in her absence? I try to explore this, what remains after someone's death. I was also attracted to this subject because it is related to my childhood. I grew up in Gorj, in Alimpești, and I can say that I had a very special relationship with my grandmother and great-grandmother. Among other things, it was a film made out of a desire to communicate with animals, but also with my childhood memories. Andrei Epure also told us how the story in Don't Let Me Die oscillates between several registers and how this stylistic ambiguity reflects his artistic intentions.
Acum îl văd un film care cumva la limită și cred că asta e.
Now I see it as a film set on the edge, and I think that's the best way to describe it. I'm referring to a liminal zone, somewhere between realism and fantasy, between comedy and horror. A combination that I suspect can be disturbing. Even the comical moments are somewhat uncomfortable. It's not always clear if or when you should laugh. Sometimes you can't tell what the director or screenwriter's intention was. In short, you don't know if those sequences were directed to provoke laughter or to create a different sensation. I didn't go to the screening in Bucharest at Le Film de Cana Bucharest because it's hard for me to go to screenings. But I heard from those who did go that there was laughter at moments when I wouldn't have expected it. I think the audience felt the need for a form of liberation, of relaxation. It was as if people were asking themselves, what does this film want from me? And I really like that. There was also this intention to make a film that starts out realistic and then opens up to other areas. I would call them transcendental or surreal. I apply this false dichotomy throughout the film, both in terms of style and tone, including the sound design. In other words, the story somehow always remains in an intermediate stage. Produced by Saga Film, the movie Don't Let Me Die brings up a pretty alarming issue: people who live alone. According to the study Dimensions of Loneliness, conducted by the Never Alone Friends of the Elderly Association, in partnership with Kantar Romania, more than half of the elderly in urban areas in Romania face loneliness, and nearly 300,000 of them feel it very strongly. Beyond the fictional story, the film brings to light an ignored reality in Romania. Lives that fade away in silence. Neighbors we only discover when they are gone. People who only become visible at the moment of death. In this context, the partnership with the association supports a common mission: to bring the issue of elderly isolation back into the spotlight and encourage the public to get actively involved. The organization urges viewers of the film to become volunteers, to offer support, time and companionship to those who live alone. Small gestures that can change lives. You have been listening to World of Culture.
Focus on Romania. Coming up next on Radio Romania International. Simply Folk.
Hello and welcome to Simply Folk. I invite you to listen to Constantin Enceanu with a round dance song.
that, our broadcast in English for listeners in Western Europe and Africa has come to an end. You can listen to our next program for Western Europe at 1800 hours UTC on 9570 kHz in the DRM system or on 9770 kHz when you cannot listen to the English language broadcasts on the usual frequency. Listeners in Africa can receive our programs tomorrow at 1200 hours UTC on 21470 kHz or on 17770 kHz when you cannot listen to the English language broadcasts on the usual frequency. We can also be heard on the internet at ri.ro channel 1. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write an email at engl@ri.ro. Goodbye.